Ovule, a horror sci-fi fiction podcast written, produced, and narrated by Brian W. Alaspa. Chapter 8.
The emergency broadcast system has been activated. Please tune to AM 930 for full information from the government about the emergency. Details will be given to all citizens about where to go and what resources are available to them. Repeat, this is a national emergency and the emergency broadcast system has been activated. A credible threat has been established against the United States and all citizens. This broadcast station has been preempted to direct you to a station where you can find details to keep yourself and your family safe. Please tune to AM 930 for all information necessary to survive this emergency. Repeat, this is a national emergency, and this is a message from the emergency broadcast system.
Good morning, Dave. Well, it's been about 2.5 weeks since my last recording. Neil and I have been working hard, and now we have our pickup truck completed. Later on today, we're going to drive out to this field we found during one of our scavenger hunts. And we have more than 100 bottles ready to be turned into firebombs. I think we can probably spare a few. Some of the others at the warehouse have joined us in our little quest, too, which is kind of exciting, especially those who arrived a little bit late, maybe 2 weeks ago. Jake, Ellie, and Marcus. They were so shell-shocked when they first got here, I thought that they would just remain catatonic. Instead, here they are, working with us. There's also a new girl just came. Her name's Lucy. And she looks like she's going to join us too. What can I say about the young? They always just want to fight, don't they? They want to do something. The days of sitting there waiting for things to happen are over, I guess. Or at least I hope. For the first time since this whole thing started, I sort of feel good about things, which I know it's all misplaced emotion, but let me have a good feeling for once, okay? I feel like I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna fight back. I did want to mention something else, however, and I think I'm the only one who has noticed, but I saw something the other day while we were out hunting. Out scavenging. We don't really hunt, but we scavenge. I feel like we're hunting. Hunter-gatherers. I saw a group of infected people, and they got out of a truck with a Mountain View license plate on the back. So one of the original infected, and I didn't recognize them, but you can probably guess, as I did, that they were among those in the first wave, at least in this area, who were infected. The people in the town, you know. I think one of them actually might have been that hardware store guy I met on the first day, now that I think about it. What the hell was his name? Can't even remember. It feels like 2 or 3 lifetimes ago. Anyway, the other hunters just moved on, looking for more food and other supplies, but I stayed behind and I watched. It took a few moments, but I realized what it was that I saw and that froze me to the spot. On all of those infected folks from Mountain View, there were weird red spots all over their bare skin. Strange, flaky, red, inflamed spots up and down the arms and across their faces. Sort of looked like psoriasis, but not quite. Around the edges of each of the sores was gray. I was looking through binoculars, and so... I still have a pair of binoculars. I managed to keep those safe. Anyway, I was looking through those, and I could see around the edges of each of the sores this gray substance that reminded me of the gray stuff the flowers grow out of. Now, of course, you're going to ask me, okay, Mr. Scientist, Mr. Medical Man, Mr. Government Man, what does that mean? And the fact is, I don't know. I just keep thinking, of course, about the thing that has kept running through my head almost from the start. My favorite topic of discussion, if it's not warrior wasps, it's zombie ants. The zombie ants who stop at some point being zombies and being controlled. And then the fungus inside them just overgrows them and they die. Anyway, I think it's time to burn some stuff. So... I will talk to you later. Well, excuse me. Night has come again, Dave, and I'm sitting outside for now. Overhead, there appear to be 10,000, a million stars? One thing about this total destruction of humanity is the skies have gotten a lot more clear. Far fewer fires, although we did start one today, but there are no meteors flying overhead. Nothing crashing to the ground. In the distance, I can hear truck engines revving and roaring down the streets. A few times I've heard what I think might have been gunshots. I don't really want to think about that, though. Once, briefly, I heard what sounded like a woman screaming the word, "No, no," over and over again. Really loud. It got to a high pitch and then just cut off mid-yell. Somehow that was more terrifying than the actual yelling, but again, I'm trying to focus. I'm trying to compartmentalize. And I'm trying to focus on the stars right now, on the night, on the fact that it's cool out and we have had a very successful test of the catapult this afternoon. I think I mentioned earlier we found a field maybe 20 miles from the city. Neil found it. I swear that man has a knack for finding things. You just need to ask for something and he just snaps his fingers, it seems like, and there it is. Anyway, we set up a wooden structure from scraps we had gathered. We basically built something resembling one of those National Park Ranger towers. Obviously a lot lower to the ground. We weren't trying to make something that could easily be seen from far away. Anyway, same sort of deal. It had sort of an observation platform on the top and some crisscross beams for legs below. Just something with a little bit of height to it. Anyway, I realize, of course, the stadium is not all made of wood. But it was a test to see how the catapults would work. How our aim would work. How it was trying to fire firebombs from a moving vehicle. Once it was built, we brought the two pickup trucks into which we had installed our devices, and we drove in circles around the tower and began launching the bottles at it. We only brought about 20 bottles, 10 apiece, so we had to make them count. My first missed entirely and started the ground on fire. Then the second truck, they hit the supports beneath the tower platform, and it burst into flame. I reloaded fast and sent another. This one broke apart on the wall of the observation platform. The liquid splattered all across the wood and caught fire. Just a moment later, a bottle from the second truck landed right on top of the platform. The flames started to rise then. I wanted to get one good shot, so I quickly reloaded and sent another, and this one also landed inside the platform. Boom! I guess this is bringing out my inner firebug. When I was a kid, you know, like most kids, I had my time when I played with matches and fire, even though I was told not to. Because as soon as you're told not to do something, of course, you immediately want to do nothing but. This brought out my inner firebug. Because soon the tower was completely engulfed. We each sent one more bottle into the supports down below. Once again, the fluid spattered all across the bottom, the supports, when the bottles broke, and caught fire. We had the catapults working properly, and we had the mix of flammable liquid just right. It's not just alcohol. Oh no, we have created our own unique mix of liquids, which just burst into flames and continue to burn, burning hot and intense. We, of course, put the fires out pretty fast after that, dismantled the tower. It was pretty easy. We were not exactly, you know, construction workers, so we just kind of tipped them over, and the fire had already made it so that it was even more structurally unsound than when we first built it. And we got the hell out of there before the infected showed up to see what was going on. We talked afterwards, and we'd like to run another test, and I'm going to mix more of the flammable liquid tomorrow. The equipment held up well. We did some inspection of the catapults tonight, and everything held. All the welds held together. So overall, despite the nightmarish sounds I hear indicating the world is over, and lives are changing or ending, I feel good. Damn it, I shouldn't feel guilty for it either, so I won't let myself. Just another test, just one more real test, and then we can try going after the stadium. Despite the violence and horrible nature of what I have set in motion, it feels good to have a goal. Feels good to be doing something. If they capture me and I end up at another location, injected or infected with spores, I will hold on to the memory of the blow I struck for as long as I can. Perhaps trying to take some memory of that into whatever the next life is when you become infected. For now, I'm going to sit in silence for a bit longer. The stars are so bright. So many of them. I am just exhausted, but it's the kind of exhaustion that comes from hard work. good night for now. Well, Dave, I'm on the run again. Well, I mean, not right at this moment. I'm hiding again. I've actually had a minute to try to catch my breath, even though my heart is still hammering in my chest, and I still feel like I'm going to have a massive anxiety attack, but we're in a different warehouse. Neil is with me along with two others, but the rest of everybody who was at that warehouse, I have no idea. They came for us tonight about an hour after I stopped recording and went to bed. Suddenly the door to the place exploded inward, and the infected marched in. At the front were what appeared to be cops, all decked out in riot gear, complete with gas masks. Behind them were what appeared to be people in military uniform. They started shooting tear gas into the warehouse. I was so confused for several moments, awakened out of a sound sleep. Neil was at my side in seconds, and maybe he was still awake, I don't know, but he was there, shaking me, telling me to wake up. He had a backpack with him, and a duffel bag. The gas got to us fast, and we were in tears and choking, and felt like my entire body was burning, but I still got as many of our homemade firebombs as I could grab. Then we lit a few, and sent them flying into the mass of infected people who had by now marched into the warehouse. The firebombs exploded, and the infected went up like torches. They didn't stop marching. They kept marching forward, even as they burned. And the buzzing sounds, you know, the buzzing sounds they give out whenever they're in danger, started like a giant engine. But despite being engulfed entirely in flames, they kept marching and firing tear gas canisters. The flames didn't stop them, even as they burned, and only stopped them when they reached the point where their internal organs must have finally failed and they fell forward. Then, some of them started firing bullets. I saw one of the kids in the group get grabbed and hauled off. The mother went after her and she was grabbed. Tasers were out in seconds and she went down, and so did the other kid. One by one, they started tasing and dragging people away. I lit another firebomb. Neil did too. Another inferno, and more of them were in flames. They went up like straw, Dave. But they didn't scream. No screaming in pain. As if they were not burning at all. They had no indication of pain. Just like Mountain View. Just like every other time we've seen the infected lit up. They just burned. Two more of my fellow firebugs showed up, and we all just ran for the door nearest to us. Right there. On the side of the building. Out the door. We were out in the night, coughing, spewing, some of us vomiting. Of course, there were more soldiers and cops, and they started firing more tear gas. Neil had the keys to one of the trucks, and he jumped in the driver's seat. I got into the back, despite my face just pouring liquid, like I was a water balloon with too many leaks. I loaded up our little catapult and soon hurled two more firebombs into the crowd of soldiers and cops. Boom, boom, they went up. But the problem was, they didn't stop. All the infected were in flames, but they were still firing, still shooting at us, and still trying to get us to stop. Neil screamed for all of us to hold on, and he drove right through the pack of cops and soldiers. I felt a hot, searing pain across the top of my right shoulder, but I just held on back there for dear life. We hit something very solid a moment later, and I heard crunching metal. Bullets were flying now, and I also heard one of our cohorts in the front of the truck scream. The second pickup truck had also been started. When things smoothed out a bit, I lifted my head and saw that it had moved maybe 20 yards, that second truck. However, the cops and soldiers had overwhelmed it. They dragged the people out of the truck, and then I didn't see them again. There were cops and soldiers coming after us. I also heard a different sort of buzzing coming from the air. Sure enough, there were drones following us. They were like angry hornets dodging beneath tree branches and turning right and left with us. I shouted to the men in the front of the truck and said the drones were following. One of the passengers leaned out the side and fired a gun at the nearest drone. I don't know, he was either a sniper or it was a lucky shot, because the drone burst apart and fell to the ground. I asked for a gun, and Neil reached back, handing me a shotgun through the window. I grabbed that, lay back, and fired at the next drone. I think probably because it was a shotgun, a scatter gun, and not just a bullet, that drone didn't stand a chance. The drone's gone. The soldiers and cops started shooting for real. I heard the bullets plonking into the metal of the truck. I heard things whiz past my head. The back window of the truck cracked and burst apart in tiny shards of glass. I lifted my head and saw the infected behind us, several Humvees trundling down the street, the soldiers using the gun on the top to fire at us. I fired a few shots from the shotgun, but we were too far ahead. However, they were catching up with us fast. "We need to get off-road," I shouted. Neil didn't hesitate. The moment he had a chance, he turned a sharp left, and soon we were all holding on again for dear life. The truck had four-wheel drive, but that did not mean the ride was smooth. Then we were deep in the trees. Overhead, there were just tree branches and stars. I don't know how long we were driving, but it felt like days. The ride was so rough. There was no way to stand up or try to fire back. Couldn't fire bullets or even throw firebombs. I just closed my eyes and hoped the truck would hold out. Eventually, after what seemed like days, we burst through the trees and pulled up next to this old office. It's an office in an industrial park with another big warehouse space and loading dock. I'm in one of the offices now, bandaged up. Turned out, one of the bullets grazed my right shoulder. Lots of blood. A little bit of pain, but no real damage. Lucy, our newest member, however, the woman in the passenger seat who I heard scream, she got shot in the back and is not doing so well. There are five of us, but Lucy may not make it until morning. We have a truck, but the damage to it is pretty extensive. I have about 24 firebombs. I think Neil has some more. All of my attempts to keep us hidden, and they still found us. I keep thinking about those kids I saw dragged away. They're probably headed for the stadium right now. We're in trouble, Dave. But there's also hate. Such burning, intense hate in my heart. I want to strike back more than ever. Damn it. Damn it. Hello again, Dave. You know, today Neil asked me who Dave was and why I was always talking to him. I told him all about you, about how you were a fellow scientist, about how we went to college together and beyond. I told him about some of the crazy things we did in college, but that we were always driven by science and the idea of discovering things. I haven't thought about those days a lot lately, Dave. I mean, I haven't really thought about you as a person in a while, I guess. Dave is just a name I throw out there because it feels better to think I'm talking to a person when I do these recordings. I miss you, Dave. I miss all my friends, my colleagues, other people. I mean, we had a few conversations just after the meteors fell, and I listened to some of your reports from Oscar's Mill before things went silent. How long has it been since I heard your voice? Months, I guess. Anyway, him asking and me telling, I guess, has made me a bit nostalgic. It's hard not to fall down into that rabbit hole. It's been a few days, and we've been at the office complex since. Well, wait, that's not really true. We moved to a high-rise office building. We've taken a floor, put the truck in an underground parking garage, and covered it with garbage and debris. We hope the beat-up thing looks enough like junk no one will bother it, but it kind of is junk, with all the holes in it and missing pieces. So we have the high ground. Not much ammunition, but we can still see out around quite a bit. Perhaps a couple of miles. If they come for us, we'll know it, I think. I hope. We won't be able to fight them, of course, but at least we'll know they're coming. Maybe we'll get a chance to run. We've been trying to work on the truck, too. It's running again. Not well, but we think it would be quiet enough and run well enough to get us up close to the stadium. I even made a few more bombs. I don't have too much of the flammable liquid mixture I created, but we're very careful about going out and getting supplies, and we found enough additional supplies to make some more bombs. The catapult is working great. Looks like I can build a weapon like that with the best of them, huh? Maybe I was born in the wrong time. Should have been in medieval times with siege weapons. Maybe I should try my hand at a trebuchet next. I guess I should probably also mention, if I'm going to be thorough in my reports, the bad news. Lucy did die. She passed away the next morning. I think the bullet clipped one too many blood vessels, and she bled out. It's a horrible way to go. We eventually decided we just weren't far enough from the other warehouse. We needed to get further away, so we drove away, found this place. I can see the stadium from the windows here. I'm looking at it now. From this angle, I can see the trucks coming and going. I see people being marched in and out. I can't really make out the people in the stands, but there are weird colors there, bunched together like a crazy quilt, which must be people's clothes. We sealed off the doors as best we can. Any doors deemed unnecessary, we did our best to sort of weld them shut. We used office furniture to block off other doors that we found. I've tried talking to the group and find out if they still want to attack the stadium. They agreed to help fix up the truck, but I think they're scared. And I admit it's hard not to be. From this vantage point, we can see them at night, the infected. We keep our heads down. I still have a pair of binoculars, and I scan the horizon. I can see the trucks with guys in riot gear and military fatigue stopping at houses or other places. They get out. There's tear gas. There's people being dragged out in zip ties. They all get put in the back of trucks, and then they end up at the stadium. I understand the desire to hide and to be afraid, but if I can't get them to rally to this idea, I need to pack up and move on. It might be time to get out of Denver, too. Maybe I just need to go live in a desert somewhere. Oh, and I've seen more of those red and gray rashes on the cop's arm. Not easy to do, even with the binoculars, but I saw them on the night they raided the warehouse. When they are close to this place, with the binoculars, I can see them too. Even though they try to cover everything, enough of their arms usually show that I can see it. Bright red, even when it's dark outside. Something is happening. Viruses, you know, they mutate constantly. That's why we can never be 100% sure the flu vaccine we used to tell people to get every year was effective. The virus would mutate and become something else. Viruses are quite amazing if you take away the death they bring, you know. I know you do, Dave, but it's worth remembering. They live to reproduce, and in fact, they don't think, they just act. When they are threatened, they evolve. Instantly, almost, mutating into other forms which become resistant to drugs that worked just the day before. They attack new parts of the body or find new ways to make people sick. They just want to survive. They move from host to host, just surviving. I'm starting to think humans need to be like that now. A virus has taken down humanity, and now we remaining humans need to take the same tactic as a virus. We need to change, mutate, adapt. Anyway, I guess that's enough for now. I'm going to take a watch out the window and see what I can see. It's nighttime again, and I should be sleeping. The others are, with Neil taking the watch, but I can't sleep, though. So I just quietly moved down the hall to this office. It was probably an office for a bigwig who worked here once, because it's a nice corner office with windows looking out two directions. Neil's in one of the other offices down the hall, the slightly better view of the stadium. The downtown area is visible from other windows. From here, I just see houses. Not many lights anymore, but there are a few. Probably lights on automated cycles coming on and shutting off when morning comes. I just wonder if some of the lights might be people still trying to hide. Of course, if they're hiding, I guess they wouldn't have lights on. But it's a weird sign of life, even if it's an automated life. How many uninfected are left? I wish I could find out. Amazing how fast the technology and the world just falls apart when things like this happen. We're also connected via our phones and computers, but all that's gone. Neil and I had a heart-to-heart just a little while ago. He talked to the others, and they don't seem to have their heart into attacking the stadium. Neil is still raring to go. He says he can't stop thinking about the two lines of people going into two different tents. He worries that people at the warehouse who were taken away were divided into those two lines. One taken away to be infected, the other to be exterminated. Neil and I sat down and started to talk about trying to assault the stadium on our own. I think we came up with some good ideas, but I don't know if it will be effective with just the two of us. At the same time, it will still be something. Still be something. Ah, Dave, my head hurts right now. I'm so tired. I had that brief moment at that warehouse where I felt that things might somehow turn out okay. I know I was fooling myself, of course, but I still had that moment, that brief instant of safety, that moment of maybe things will work out somehow. There are so many of them out there right now, the infected. Apparently, they are still using at least some of the technology available to them because they found us at the warehouse. They used the guns and they used tear gas. I want to punch back so much. I think I'll ask Neil if he feels up to trying to attack the stadium tomorrow night. I'll ask him in the morning. I can't just stay down. Once it's done, I'll probably leave Denver. I'll head out and try to find a way to live. Maybe. So many maybes. Oh, I'm so tired. I need to sleep. Good night, Dave. I hope you're resting wherever you are. You've been listening to the horror sci-fi podcast, Ovule, written, narrated, and produced by Brian W. Alaspa. If you'd like to actually read some of the nearly 50 books and novels Brian Alaspa has written, look him up at Amazon.com. His books are available as audiobooks, in print, as well as ebooks.